Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Thursday, October 3rd. Joining us today are Eric and Kate. Let's dive into our fascinating topic. Today, we're discussing a groundbreaking study on schizophrenia and auditory hallucinations. Let's start with the basics. What did this research reveal about brain activity in people with schizophrenia who hear voices?
Well, Ted, this study is really mind-blowing. It's uncovered a fascinating combo of brain functions that could be behind these hallucinations. And get this, it's not just one issue, but two working together like partners in crime.
Hold your horses, Eric. You're making it sound like a simple two-step process. The researchers actually
I hear you, Kate, but let's not overcomplicate things. To put it in layman's terms, they discovered a breakdown in the brain's ability
but still not quite there. It's crucial to understand that it's not just about one malfunctioning area, but how these two processes interact to create the experience of hearing voices. We're talking about a delicate neural dance.
Interesting perspectives, both of you. Can you explain what these two processes are in more detail?
Sure thing, Ted. The first is called corollary discharge. Think of it as a predictive text for your brain, you know? It's like your brain's personal assistant, anticipating the sound of your own voice before you even open your mouth. Pretty neat, huh?
And the second is the efference copy, which is basically the brain's internal representation of motor commands. In this case, it's related to speech production. It's like the brain's blueprint for what it's about to say.
Exactly. Now here's the kicker. The study found that in people with schizophrenia who hear voices, the corollary discharge is reduced while the efference copy is hyperactive. It's like the brain's internal DJ is playing the wrong track at full volume.
But it's more nuanced than that, Eric. You're oversimplifying again. The hyperactivity in the efference copy is generalized, not
I get what you're saying, Kate, but let's not lose sight of the big picture here. The key point is that these two systems are out of whack.
Out of whack. Really, Eric. We're discussing serious neuroscience here, not a broken washing machine. The point is that this generalized hyperactivity creates a constant background noise in the brain, making it harder to distinguish between internal thoughts and external voices.
How does this differ from people without schizophrenia, or those with schizophrenia who don't hear voices?
Great question, Ted. In people without schizophrenia, these systems work in harmony like a well-oiled machine. The corollary discharge prepares the brain for self-produced sounds, and the efference copy is only enhanced for specific speech acts. It's like your brain knows exactly when to hit the mute button on your internal monologue.
And in people with schizophrenia who don't hear voices, while they show reduced corollary discharge, they don't have the hyperactive efference copy that seems to be the key difference. It's like their brain's volume control is a bit off, but not cranked up to 11 like in those who experience auditory hallucinations.
This research reminds me of historical studies on the brain. Can you think of any similar breakthroughs in understanding mental health conditions?
Absolutely, Ted. This reminds me of the groundbreaking work of Alois Alzheimer in the early 1900s. He identified the physical changes in the brain associated with what we now call Alzheimer's disease. It was like finding the smoking gun for a mental disorder.
That's an interesting comparison, but I think the discovery of the role of dopamine in schizophrenia in the 1950s is a
I see your point, Kate, but Alzheimer's work was revolutionary because it linked physical brain changes to mental symptoms, just like this.
Fair. But the dopamine hypothesis directly relates to schizophrenia and led to the development of antipsychotic medications, which is more directly relevant to this discussion. It's like comparing apples and
oranges. Can you elaborate on these historical events and why they're important in this context?
Certainly, Ted. Alzheimer's discovery was like finding a treasure map of the mind. He identified abnormal clumps, now known as amyloid plaques, and tangled fibers, neurofibrillary tangles, in the brain of a patient with memory loss. This was the first time a mental disorder was linked to physical brain changes. It's like he found the fingerprints of dementia.
And the dopamine hypothesis? That was a happy accident. A drug used to treat tuberculosis, which lowered dopamine levels, also reduced psychotic symptoms. Talk about a two-for-one deal. This led to the development of drugs that block dopamine receptors, revolutionizing schizophrenia treatment. It's like they stumbled upon the brain's volume knob for psychosis.
Both discoveries changed how we view and treat mental health conditions, much like this new research could do for auditory hallucinations in schizophrenia. It's like we're constantly updating the user manual for the human brain.
I agree. But the dopamine hypothesis has had a more direct impact on schizophrenia treatment for decades. It's still the basis for most antipsychotic medications used today. It's like the Swiss Army knife of schizophrenia treatment, versatile and reliable.
How do you think these historical events might influence the impact of this new research?
They show us that understanding the physical basis of mental health conditions can lead to targeted treatments. This new insight into auditory hallucinations could potentially lead to more effective therapies. It's like we're finally getting the right tools to fix a complex machine.
While that's true, we should be cautious. The dopamine hypothesis, while groundbreaking, didn't solve everything. We need to remember that schizophrenia is complex, and this new research, while promising, is just one piece of the puzzle. It's like we've found a new piece, but we're still far from seeing the whole picture.
Looking ahead, how do you think this research might change the treatment landscape for schizophrenia?
I believe this could lead to more targeted treatments, Ted. If we can develop drugs that specifically address the corollary discharge and efference copy issues, we might be able to reduce auditory hallucinations more effectively. It's like creating a custom-made key for a very specific lock in the brain.
That's overly optimistic, Eric. While this research is interesting, translating it into effective treatments is a long and complex process. We shouldn't get ahead of ourselves.
I'm not suggesting it will happen overnight, Kate, but this gives us a clear direction for drug development. We could potentially see new classes of antipsychotics that work differently from current dopamine blocking drugs. It's like
we've seen promising research before that hasn't panned out. Remember the glutamate hypothesis? It seemed promising, but hasn't led to any breakthrough treatments yet. We need to temper our expectations and focus on rigorous
What about
testing.
Non-pharmacological treatments? Could this research inform other types of interventions?
Absolutely, Ted. This could lead to new cognitive training techniques. If we can help patients distinguish between internal and external stimuli more effectively, it might reduce the impact of hallucinations. It's like teaching the brain to be a better fact checker for its own thoughts.
That's an interesting point, but I think we need to be careful not to oversimplify. Cognitive training has shown mixed results in schizophrenia treatment so far. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution.
True, but this research gives us a more specific target. We could develop exercises that specifically train the brain to better predict self-generated speech and filter internal chatter. It's like creating a personalized workout plan for the brain.
While that sounds good in theory, implementing it effectively is another matter. We need to consider the practical challenges of delivering such targeted interventions. It's not just about having the right idea, but also about making it work in the real world.
How might this research impact our understanding of other mental health conditions?
This could open up new avenues for understanding other conditions involving perception distortions, Ted. Think about certain types of anxiety or even some forms of depression. It's like we found a new lens to look at various mental health issues.
That's a stretch, Eric. We need to be careful about generalizing findings from one specific aspect of schizophrenia to other conditions. Each disorder has its own unique neurological profile. It's not
like I understand your caution, Kate, but isn't that how science progresses? By making connections and testing hypotheses, this research could inspire new ways of thinking.
Of course, Eric. But we need to be responsible in how we communicate these ideas. Overgeneralizing can lead to misconceptions and false hopes. Let's focus on what this means for schizophrenia first before we start speculating about other conditions.
Thank you both for this insightful discussion. It's clear that while this research opens up exciting possibilities, there's still much work to be done in understanding and treating schizophrenia and other mental health conditions. We'll be watching closely as this field develops. This has been Ted for Listen 2, signing off.